also telling and convincing my patients to go vegan. So these are the things that cannot be challenged. These are the facts where you see your LDL, which is the bad cholesterol, drop from 178 to 98. There is no arguments left anymore that all animals are made out of cholesterol and all plants are made out of fiber. You get zero cholesterol in the plants. And that, and on the contrary, plants reduce your cholesterol. So these are the things that you cannot really argue about. It is there. Whether you make a choice in that direction or not, it really doesn't matter because it's really a personal choice. Being a part of the conference, the science and scientists, I thought I would take it to a different territory. And in that territory, it is something that not everyone is in that territory. But they have a choice, they want to. So I kept the topic of my talk, veganism is a science of subjectivity in action. Just looking at it, it seems like a bunch of random words and not necessarily flowing with each other. But last several years of my life, 15, 20 years of my life, has been nothing but that. It's been a flow. The veganism has flown into me. And through the science, through the subjectivity, and through the actions. So these are all four different words, but each one has a tremendously deeper meaning for me in my own personal way. And that is the reason I am at this spot as a president of the New Jersey chapter of the World Vegan Vision, which was originally the platform started by great visionary Ms. Vanishvesha. So I feel really fortunate to be here talking about veganism. It is not just, I consider it as a duty, it's a joy. It's a joy for me that flows, and I have no control of it. Talking about veganism is a pure pleasure. So we'll start with the word science. What is science? And what is scientist? A scientist is the one who practices science, just like a doctor who practices medicine. Well, science is not bigger than scientist himself. Because scientist only practices science, doctor only practices medicine, but medicine is bigger, not bigger than doctor himself. So I look at the basic core values as a science. Science means what? Science means curiosity, to look for something new. Science means courage, that requires you to drop the old beliefs and start with the new beliefs that comes in front of you. Science means truth, something that has to come in front of you. Your belief in the truth will lead you on the way to the discovery. Then also you need to have wisdom to make sense of all the findings that come in front of you. So the purity is science. So does that mean if somebody has all these characteristics, he can be a scientist? I don't know. I found that answer a lot later, and I'll tell you how. The scientist can study different objects. Science is really meant for the scientist to use it on a day-to-day life, whether the scientist is in the field of mathematics or biology or astronomy or studying the galaxies or moons, the objects keep on changing. But the scientist is the subject himself. If you really look at it, the whole world is divided. The whole interactions happen between a subject and an object. Where the subject has to be loaded with this criteria to really make a significant discovery, significant performances. So the science is needed for a scientist to become a scientist, then only he can perform on the objects. So different fields are available in the field of science. But is the subject bigger or the object? Naturally, subject is smarter. He can apply his intelligence, awareness, all these things on the object itself and can perform and become a scientist. But you have to realize that objects are just as important, because a subject cannot be a subject without an object. It's like when a childbirth takes place, a child and the mother are born at the same time. As soon as the child is born, the woman becomes out of the newborn child. Same way, a doctor is not a doctor without patients. Imagine I'm a doctor with little good training and everything and don't have a single patient. Then it's not, I cannot be a doctor. So everything is relative in this world. And the objectivity and subjectivity, if you really look around, the subjectivity literally controls the whole world. And all the actions and all advancements have taken place by the subjectivity. But the objects are equally important. So in my case, when I started my practice, my patients were my objects. I wanted them to make them happy. I wanted them, I told them to eat the right food, do the exercise, all these things. But somehow, all across my practice, it kept on coming out as that we know all. We have Google, we have internet, we know everything. But we cannot do it. So the question was, their minds had all the information, but mind would not do what it wants to do. So the question was a heart-burning question for me. That question itself generated a scientist in me. I had curiosity, so why the mind wants to do things, but cannot do it? What is there to control the mind? We have the body, we have the mind, and we are intelligent people, how come we are failing? The question became a burning question for me. At that point, my curiosity started, my adventure started, my exploration started, and in one auspicious day, I came across a beautiful book, Bhagavad Gita. Somehow, it has all the answers that I needed for my patients. And one of the slokas that really enticed me had a wisdom written 2500 years ago, and even more ancient in Vedas, yato vishyam punsa sangateshu upajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamat krodh abhijayate krodh bhavati sammoha sammoha sruti vikram sruti varsha kuti nasya kuti nasya pranashati. It's a beautiful slope, probably beyond understanding of some people here, but it basically says that man pays attention to an object of pleasure, they call wish, is the poison. And once he pays a little bit of attention, the desire starts for that object. And then what happens? The desire leads to a tango. You're literally dancing with the object of pleasure. And that object of pleasure takes over your mind, because then it's almost like a cobra dances to the flute player. You become the object, and the cobra becomes the subject. The flute player becomes the subject. So the object controls your life. It haunts you. It literally takes over your mental space. And at that point, the objects of pleasure become the subjects. They control you. You stop listening to your doctors. You stop listening to your spouse. You stop listening to your friends. They don't mean anything. Only that object of pleasure means a lot. And then ultimately you lose you start getting angry, because you cannot do a lot of things that you want to do. You keep on, you are being haunted by your daughter and spouse and friends and everybody, and you start developing anger, because now your mind is fixed on one object, and ultimately you lose your wisdom, you start taking wrong actions, start going in the wrong directions, and ultimately you perish. In two slopes, I realized that this is my whole practice. Everybody is taken over by different objects. So I found lot of benefit in going on that route. So I could not tell them if my own minds were controlled by my own objects of pleasures. So I had to do an experiment like a scientist. I had to do it myself before I could believe it. And then I started my journey on the spiritual aspect, and then I went on and on, studied a lot of scriptures. And it required me to realize that your internal structure is not just me. I looked at myself as a subject and patients as objects, but what I believed was the subject, meaning me, I started differentiating within me with a gradual meditation, and went deeper and deeper, that I could literally and it wanted me to objectify my mind and my body. Where the mind and body can be objectified, a new subject started rising in me, which I thought I was the subject, but my identification as me, Dr. Shanisha, practicing here and telling the patients what to do and all that, became meaningless. Even that became demoted for me. So any reaction that happens, that discriminatory mind, discrimination that is hidden within you, you start realizing that discrimination starts picking up your mind and body related to the world as an object, and your subjectivity starts rising. So science was created or was already within me. You require these qualities of purity, discriminative tendency, truth, honesty, and courage to drop old beliefs and pick up the new beliefs. And all these things are necessary to go on the path of meditation and the discovery of the self, just like a scientist. So a scientist was born in me because of my patients. I wanted to help them. So that journey not only helped me, but it ultimately helped my patients. And at some point, an auspicious moment, I started realizing that all my old beliefs that I am this, I have this, I own this, are only the concepts hidden at the mind level. But beyond that, I don't die, I still exist. The pure existence, the pure consciousness is the ultimate subject of the whole universe. Everything else is the object. And again, that realization has to be within you and on your own. This path is not something where literally a lot of books are written. You cannot read anywhere. Even though books are written, they don't come to a help, because your inner journey is your inner journey. And that, on the contrary, all the knowledge that you have gathered, you want to drop it because they are at the mind level. At the mind level, you have a lot of encyclopedias and a lot of arguments and a lot of questions. But when you start rising beyond the mind, you are on your own. You dropping your old beliefs, including the belief that you are this and you are that, all your possessions, all your body doesn't mean nothing. So the consciousness started rising within you. Along with this, I was also experimenting with veganism from the health point of view, because I was seeing the results, and I started saying that, should I go in 100% vegan or not? So as you go within and you take a journey inside, it is everybody's experience who have experienced meditation that your sensitivity starts rising, because your sensitivity is located in the subjective field. And when the sensitivity starts rising, your decision starts becoming more and more clear. So yes, I had all the information that meat is not good for you. I've been vegetarian all my life, so meat never came into the question, but the meat was still a major factor that I had to deal with. I knew that it raises your cholesterol, it also can raise your blood sugars, all those things, and every time I go to the parties, I would want to have them, and yet I knew that I should not. So my existence at that time was at the mind level. But with the meditation, I started getting deeper and deeper. At that point, when I really kind of went beyond my mind, I transcended my mind. At that time, suddenly, all the sufferings of the animals started bothering me. It's like you could be working as a worker in a shoe factory, for example, and you work in 8-to-5 job, you have a set amount of money coming in, you are single, and you are happy. The boss says, can you come an hour early? We have extra work. And he would say, no, I am happy. I really don't need to work extra. I don't need any extra money. All of a sudden, you decide to get married and have children. Now your needs are expanding. So now you would say, ask the boss, I say, can I come an hour early? He says, yeah, I told you already. So fine, no problem. So you're making extra money. So this goes on for 5 years, 10 years. And then suddenly someday you think that, yes, I have enough money for my wife, my children, myself. But what am I doing here? Who is going to wear these shoes? now a lot of people who have diabetes, they could be protecting their shoes. A lot of people in the third world countries could be wearing them and protecting themselves from parasitic diseases and things like that. I better pay attention to the job that I'm doing, the work that I'm doing. That quality has to be really good. I don't want any consumers to fail. So all of us have been telling the boss that I'm going to come 1 hour extra early just to make sure that to maintain the quality of my work. And the boss says, sure, you can come, but I'm not going to pay. He said, I don't care. I really want to do this. I want to make sure the quality of my work is really good. And you start coming. All of a sudden, you're connecting with somebody who you have never known. All the consumers who are using your product, you are connected with them. You don't even know them. And that's what exactly happened to me one day. In exploring more and more vegan facts, I realized that, and again, this is my personal thing, that artificial insemination is a routine thing because milk is a product. Milk is a product that is produced by a mother after the delivery. And for the baby, the milk is produced and the milk production goes on for a year and a half. After that, they have to be made pregnant again. So pregnancy is very central for all females who produce milk. And in the old days, the cows used to roam around and having their own internal desires based on their hormones to get pregnant. Now, the businesses cannot afford to do that. So artificial insemination is a routine practice. They have to get pregnant no matter what. So those things started bothering me. The inner consciousness that was rising within me somehow started seeing something wrong with this industry. That I felt that what if one of the females from my own family, my mother, my sister, my wife, has to be subjected to this torture? How would I feel that they have to be pregnant, 9 months of pregnancy, delivery, and then the baby never gets their mother's milk, and then it goes on, and for a year and a half they have to be made pregnant again, and when you're finished, they cut you up and eat them up, and that's it. If this is the life of a female from my family, would I want it? So it really started bothering me. The thing that bothered me the most, because I was so deep into spirituality and the consciousness, is where you find your ultimate truth. When they say truth is God, literally it is. But it's your own experience. The truth is where you land up when you meditate and you reach to the self-realized state. That's what, at that point, any suffering you would want to avoid. Any person, any animal, any soul who is suffering around in the world, it bothers you. So at that time, the artificial insemination bothered me. And this was my conversion point into 100% vegan. And that was that what artificial insemination is, a pregnancy without consent. Who takes consent of a cow to get pregnant? That bothered me. To me, it's a big. So, evaluating from this criteria, I just decided. Now, then, at that point onwards, whenever I would attend the parties, I used to be kind of having two thoughts before, that okay, people are enjoying these foods, I cannot, but it's okay, I'm going to stay on vegan diet for just health reasons. But now, every time I walk away from the non-vegan diet, I feel good. So at consciousness level, whatever decision you take is always going to be beneficial, not to you only, but also to your mind, because my mind is not split anymore. The mind is what deals with duality. At the consciousness level, there is no duality. It's one homogeneous, because it's spirit. It has no boundaries. It has no shape, no size, no color, but she still exists. At that level, it's a uniformity that touches every single being of this world, live or non-live. So at that time, the homogeneousness of the consciousness gives you unbelievable bliss. That bliss is for you to cherish all the time. And to remain in that state, meaning bypassing your mind. Mind is the storehouse of conflicts, arguments, and sufferings, winning arguments, losing arguments, all these things. But at the consciousness level, it's nothing but a peace. At that time, I gave up. And now, anytime I walk away from non-vegan food, I feel great. gives you the extra power, extra positive energy to be what you want to do, expand whatever knowledge you have gathered. So this subjectivity, the search of subjectivity for my patients led me to a beautiful, beautiful discovery within me, myself. But still, the question comes in, what about the action? Knowing all these things will remain only at the mind level. But when you go beyond that and you actually experience this consciousness, the action follows. But at that time, what happened? Your mind, as ego, as an ego, has not remained anymore. So the cosmos works through you. And all the things that come out of you only benefits the world. So the action is necessary. And action, act, you must. Viktor Frankl had written a great book called Man's Search for Meaning. He was a survivor of Holocaust. And it's a beautiful book, one of the 10 best books decided by the Reader's Circle in the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. And I read that book where he was subjected to a lot of tortures. His parents were killed, his children were killed, his wife was killed, sister was nowhere to be found. And he was a psychiatrist, and he had written a big thesis. And he was so proud of it. So when SS officers caught him, he took the thesis with him because that's all he had left, all the house and everything was taken away. And he was so excited, he thought that when the SS officer comes, I'll show this to him. At least he was so proud of his work. So when his time for interview came, he showed it to the SS officer and he says, "Officer, look at this. This is, I have put my whole life's work into it. Can I just give that?" And right in front of his eyes, the SS officer slipped it apart, threw it in the garbage. And that really was a major torment for his mind. He went into deep turmoil himself. He says, "What is mine? Whatever I thought was mine is gone. My relatives, my family, everybody, my house, my money, everything is gone. What is left? What is mine, which I thought was mine, is not mine anymore. Even the intellectual property that I thought I was holding, which was a product of my mind, is gone. There's no value. What is left?" And at the end of the deep turmoil, he comes with one answer: the ability to choose. The ability to choose is mine. That what choice I make in my life is my own, and no one can tell me anything. Now, to do the proper choice, Vedanta has a great information and the facts of life. There are three types of actions that you do. One is the tamas action. Tamas is where you are the most important and nobody else is. Drinking beer, watching TV, having fun. You don't care about the world. As long as your needs are satisfied, that's what you care. That's tamas activity, where you are the center, your ego is everything. The next level is rajas. Rajas is where you do something for someone, but you want something in reward. You go to work, you work for people, but you want to get paid. It's better than tamas. America taught everybody the rajas activity. But then comes the tapas. Tapas is the highest action. It's like you want to help people, but you don't want anything in return. It's like helping a blind man cross the road. You don't want any reward for it, but you just feel like. So tapas action is the highest action that can be performed. And our whole day is made out of three different activities. At some time we could be doing tamas, sometimes rajas, sometimes tapas. All these activities are total mixture is us. The question is, what makes tamas all the way to tapas? How much consciousness you are infusing into your own action is what decides. That's what makes you higher in life. So at tamas level, you just want to consume, but at tapas level, you don't care about yourself. You want to rise higher, and you want to be for the world. To connect that having a broader view is possible only when you connect with the consciousness. So my recommendation is to connect with the consciousness, think of the higher. Every action that you perform, think that if somebody is benefiting from this or not. A scientist can be working at Thomas level, or a scientist can be working at the Thomas level when he thinks of a benefit to the whole world. So the purity of action is very important. And the more you go closer to the consciousness, the more purity will come in your life. At that time, all the arguments and everything will fall apart, and you will become vegan. Veganism is only one aspect, but you can infuse your consciousness into your work, into your workplace, where you visit everywhere. Everyone who comes and benefits, they have to be helped. At that time, it's a great feeling, and that's what I call the veganism, a science of subjectivity in action. So whenever you understand who is the real subject, it's not you, it's the consciousness within you is the real subject. And we are all the citizens of this consciousness, which is uniform and it encompasses everything, created everything. And at that time, your actions will become very pure. So veganism, when it is decided at the consciousness level, has much more meaning than even done for the health reasons, which I have experienced. But at the same time, all these questions really get answered. And then only the consciousness flows through you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Shah, for very nice and appreciate you infusing consciousness and trying to explain veganism with consciousness. So my just I want to make a comment in reference to milk. Consciousness is the substratum of everything. So if you go to Sankhya, you can divide it into two. Consciousness, so Purush is consciousness and Prakriti is the nature. So, but both of them have, even though Prakriti is the manifestation of Purusha, but Prakriti has its own interest. And interest is to keep it sustained. Otherwise, we cannot realize consciousness. In order to realize, experience consciousness, you have to have the union. And that is why Purusha created Prakriti, its manifestation or Maya, whatever you call. And Prakriti's form of interest is procreation for the living beings, and that's where I'm bringing the milk issue. So this is a natural phenomenon in the interest of sustaining Prakriti to procreate, and milk is a side product of the procreation to sustain the newborn or and Chinese food. So using milk, I somewhat it is too far-fetched to, in my opinion, to relate it to veganism and then causing sort of hurting the mother or animal or anybody in this case. So I would like to hear more about that. How would you justify that point?
It is, again, the consciousness is what survives. The evolution, when Charles Darwin proposed the theory of the origin of the species, it was a great observation. And that really changed the face of the world and the scientific field. But the question is, who is really evolving? The other side of the evolution was never really understood by even Charles Darwin himself. In the beginning, it was the survival of the fittest, which is not the case anymore. It's the adaptability. If the animals can adapt to the environment, that's when they can progress. And the body changes can start happening. The question is if animals are not capable of evolving themselves. So there is a higher consciousness, cosmic intelligence, working through the animals and trying to express itself. So yes, all the evolution is very important. Survival is very important. But the question is, what do you want to survive as? Relying on what? That's what really matters. So, as I understand, you think that milk is necessary for survival. Is that right?
For the infant, and of course, that's
milk is needed for the survival of the progeny.
And
progeny is needed to sustain the prakriti.
Again,
and prakriti is needed to reach to consciousness.
Right. But my answer is world's 70% of the countries never saw milk. There is no cow in China. There is no cow in Japan, Korea, Taiwan, Vietnam. If we think that milk is that important, we all should be surviving. And these are some of the healthiest species on the face of the earth, which is not true at all. So, see, European countries, the Western countries, had really basically, see, in the beginning, when the farms were around in India, the grain production was very little. And the only healthy food was milk. At that time, it was a question of survival. And we had to consume the milk. At that time, the cow was considered a mother. We would give them the respect, and the milk would be good for the babies to survive and then eventually grow up. And then, yes, for survival. Now, cows are not anywhere on the farms. They are in the fact, their own farms. But the factories are harboring the cows. There is not a cow left on the field anymore. There are tractors. So now we have packed the cows just for our own pleasure, which is not right.
You are right regarding cows, what you are saying. Since you invoke the Vedanta, you invoke the consciousness in explaining this, my point is, in general prakriti, so milk is not related to only cow I'm talking about. I'm talking about the prakriti's interest of procreation, and milk is from there. So that's what I'm talking about.
I am not
concentrating on milk production, cow and prakriti and animal.
Yeah, every species has mothers, every species has children, every species makes milk. The cow's milk is cow's for the cows to consume, and whale's milk is for whale's babies to consume. If you really look at the consistency of the cow milk versus the whale's milk is like ricotta cheese, because its baby has to grow 200 pounds every single day. But every baby eventually starts drinking their own mother's milk. There is not one species which will cross the species, the boundaries, and go and drink someone else's mother's milk. It's just not right. And people use the examples of the Krishna drinking milk and this and that. But Krishna himself, in Gita itself, he says in the second chapter, you need four things. Now this is the state of highest consciousness when Krishna delivered Gita, Patram Pushpam Phulam Toyam. Patram is leaf, Pushpam is flower, Phulam is flower, and the fruits, and Toyam is water. So give me only four things. It doesn't say give me meat, it does not say give me milk. So it's just, we use these scriptures for our own benefits, but we really, the reality is that as the consciousness is rising, the consciousness will start making choices. The meditation is nothing but evolution. You are evolving yourself. You're speeding up the evolution. Look at our new generations. They don't have diabetes. They don't have high cholesterol. But you ask them, why are you going vegan? For any Muslim body. And for environmental consciousness. So consciousness is revolving right in front of us. It's evolving right in front of us. In this evolution, whether either you join it or you fall out of it. So I think the earlier we become vegan and have more compassion, if you look at it, there are so many diets, DASH diet, South Beach diet, keto diet, and all crazy diets, but there is not one diet which teaches you compassion. Only vegan diet does that. It achieves all the things that these diets bring. They bring your health, bring your cholesterol down, make you lose weight, but vegan diet does all these things and it teaches you compassion. So you can practice compassion at every single meal. And compassion is not just for doing sake. For me at least, when I meditated, and when you realize that you are nothing but the consciousness, you touch every single soul. And the compassion is a end result of reaching the self-realization. So it does not even have to be artificially created. But veganism does allow that to happen. Eventually, you will start thinking about the animals, and then sympathy and compassion will start flowing out of you. And maybe someday this will bring world peace. How can we hate people if we cannot hate animals? If we love animals, so hatred itself is a byproduct of divided mind. Mind does what? It creates anger, suffering, arguments, superiority complex, inferiority complex, desires. All these things are housed in the mind. When you transcend the mind, where is the suffering? And when who has one who has no suffering can only do good for the world.
Thank you, Dr. Shah. We really appreciate your nice speech. I'd like to limit the question in the interest of time, and I would like to invite the next speaker, Mr. Bobby Van Letter, on the stage, please. Thank you.